Welcome to the program for Friday, April 13th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown this week. And every week in the 3 o'clock hour on Friday features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by two people who are experts in the world of the federal government. A little bit of a twist on the Federal News Countdown this week. My guest, my first guest is Bob Suda. He's president and senior consultant at Suda & Associates and a veteran of the General Services Administration and the Department of Agriculture. It's always good to see you, Bob.
Appreciate it, Francis. Always good to see you, too.
Thank you. My second expert was not able to be with us today, and so although I don't consider myself an expert, I'm going to pull last-minute duty, and I've selected the stories that I think are the three most important federal news stories of the week. So, Bob, you're stuck with me this week.
Sounds like fun.
I'm sorry to disappoint you there, but we'll have a good time anyway. And we start, as we always do, with
number three.
Bob, your third most important federal news story of the week is from Federal Computer Week. It's Amber Corin's story, headlined, "Is Mobile Security a Losing Game?" And as I read this article, I thought that might actually be a rhetorical question. Yeah. What do you think as this debate about mobile technology evolves at agencies?
Well, I think the challenge for a lot of agencies right now is how to install these mobile devices. And to me, it's more about the data versus the actual device. I mean, we have iPhones, we have Droids, we have iPads, we have everything under the sun, but it's all consumer-based.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to figure out how we can use it for a business activity. I think that's a challenge that the CIOs and the program officials are struggling with, because there's mission-critical data that's going across those mobile devices.
Mm-hmm.
I think Rob Carey said it the best over at DOD, is that we have to worry about security first.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we worry about that security when it's in a mobile environment, especially things like where they work in Afghanistan and where the locations where they're at. I think it's a little less risky on the civilian side, but there is still data that's out there that is, you know, classified, or that is, you know, that's mission critical. It's prone to being hacked all the time.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, France, you get phishing every day of the week.
Yep.
On your iPhone or
yep.
on your mobile device.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it good stuff? Or is it bad stuff? What's really going on with it? What's it going to do to your system? So, I mean, I've got three devices of my own. And, you know, how do I work with those?
Mm-hmm.
So I think right now the challenge for government is, you know, how to reduce that risk of the data being accessed by some hacker or some, you know, non-trusted person.
Go back to your experience as associate CIO at Agriculture and think about this bring-your-own-device idea. Because, I mean, the core of the BYOD device is mobile. It's not, I mean, the likelihood
right.
that somebody wants to bring in their own desktop computer and monitor and hook it up to the network is, what, zero or less?
Probably zero, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. We're really focusing on mobile devices here.
That's true.
What does that look like in your view if you're still at Agriculture?
Well, yeah, I'll go back to the Agriculture days when we all had Blackberries.
Uh-huh.
We all had one device,
mm-hmm.
so we didn't use anything else besides that. And we were able to secure it. So we were able to secure the data, we were able to secure how we transmit the information. But I think today, because everything is consumer-based, and the BlackBerry, I think, was more of a business-oriented device. So I think the challenge now is how do you, again, secure the device more so than, you know, actually more so to secure the data.
Mm-hmm.
And I think once the data is secured, I think yeah, any device will work. I mean, you got Lenovo out there building things, HP building things that are all mobile-type devices.
Mm-hmm.
But they're building it for the consumer. That's where the market is today.
Is there still a market, do you think? This is just a speculative question, because we all know what's happening with BlackBerry. You know, they're really having a hard time
right.
of it right now as a company, separated from the federal government or security issues or whatever. They're just having a hard time making it. Is there room for a company to come into the market, either a company that already exists or a company that has yet to exist, and take a dominant force, a place in the marketplace the way BlackBerry did, with a device that's geared toward the enterprise but functions like some of these others, that has the security protocols already built in, like the iPhone doesn't and Android doesn't seem to, but BlackBerry did? Is there room for that, or is that horse out of the barn?
I think the horse is out of the barn. I think everything is built for the consumer, and if you bring your own device to work,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're buying as a consumer. You're buying, you know, the iPhone as a consumer to be used for iTunes, whatever you want to use it
yeah,
for.
Yeah, whatever you think
is cool. Everything
is cool
on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be a way to partition what's on those phones today. how it becomes a business phone for one piece and how it becomes a consumer phone for somebody else.
Because mm-hmm.
your kids are going to get a hold of it, you know, friends are going to get a hold of it, whoever.
Bob Suda's third most important federal news story of the week is headlined, Is Mobile Security a Losing Game? It's from Federal Computer Week, and it's linked up on federalnewsradio.com. My third most important federal news story of the week is Jack Moore's piece on the Government Accountability Office. The headline is, Shrinking GAO Budget Concerns Employees and Oversight Advocates. I guess the GAO is right there with the Internal Revenue Service as the agency most able to demonstrate its return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
Jack's story says the Government Accountability Office took a $35 million hit in the last budget cycle, but the agency seeking $526 million in the 2013 budget request. But the a number that I recall seeing is something on the order of $45 billion in either in savings or prevented spending
right.
through GAO reports
right.
in the past year.
Yeah.
It's just a mind-boggling number when you think about the amount of work that they're producing.
Well, you got to think about the ROI on them. It's like $81 per dollar spent by
yeah.
GAO, right? I wish the IGs and the departments could do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, GAO really adds value. So does the IG. Don't get me wrong. The IG does add value. But I think the return on investment that GAO has over the last 10 or 15 years,
mm-hmm.
David Walker was there, and that with Gene Denera there. I mean, I think they understand that they have to show savings,
mm-hmm.
and they are. And I think that's what needs to be happen more on the Hill with the congressional staffs to say, we're actually saving money by having this operation around.
Yeah.
So why are we trying to reduce their funding?
That's the part of it that I don't understand, because GAO is a legislative branch
mm-hmm.
agency. People get confused about that sometimes because
right.
we cover primarily executive branch agencies, but we also do a lot of reporting on what the GAO does. And so it's Congress's agency and not the president's agency,
mm-hmm.
and they're the ones that are looking at potentially cutting the budget there. I'm not sure I get that.
Yeah, I'm not sure
that.
It makes sense. Like I said before, I think the return on investment that GAO brings
mm-hmm.
has got to be looked at and then say, okay, we cannot cut this funding for this organization. They issued 1,000 reports this last year that were all valid, sound like they're all valid reports and
mm-hmm.
all for good reason,
mm-hmm.
right? And it avoided them having some hearings.
Yeah.
So what's the cost of the hearings versus the cost of issuing the report?
That's something that you and I were talking about as it relates to the General Services Administration scandal before we went on the radio. A lot of folks think that a hearing doesn't cost any money.
Right.
That they're just – that's a part of the equation that just never gets discussed, and yet it's out there, and these events don't happen for free.
No. In fact, when I dealt with GAO in the past, either on the financial side or the IT side – they would come in, they would spend 2 or 3 days with you, and they'd be gone, and the report would come out. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they were very quick about trying to get to a resolution or to result on the reports.
Jack Moore's series on the Government Accountability Office is terrific, and I can say that because I didn't have anything to do with it. I wasn't involved with it at all, but it's terrific with lots of resources, not just the written word, but some terrific charts and graphs about the GAO's spending and return on investment and so on, and I commend that to you on federalnewsradio.com anytime you want to see it. It's the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose. Today my guest is Bob Suda, and we'll continue the countdown with the second most important federal news story of the week. His choice, my choice, when In Depth continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every week here at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guest, Jeremy Farber, president of PC Recycler. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire Washington, D.C. metro area. If you'd like to know more about our firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Life's big decisions require some research. You get comparison reports before you buy a car. You hire an inspector when buying a house. You might even look up someone online before a date. But when you go to pick your primary care physician, sometimes you only get a name and number. That hardly seems fair. After all, the only person who has more influence on your health is you. It's different at Kaiser Permanente. All our doctors are listed online with information that paints a picture of who they are, so you know you're picking a doctor who is right for you, right for your family, and someone you can email. Oh, here's one for Dr. Amy Benoulis, who went to Northwestern. Dr. Lindsay Strickland is interested in chronic disease management and is accepting new patients. Bingo! Become a member, and no matter whom you choose, you get a true advocate for your health. So log on to kp.org/doctor and check us out. It could be the beginning of a healthy relationship. Kaiser Permanente. Thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated. 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
This is Lisa Millman from AFMA. For over 133 years, AFMA has proudly served the U.S. Armed Forces community. We're more than just great life insurance for the military family. We're your guide through life's challenges by offering the right products at the right time for the best price. Our Survivor Assistance Services team provides compassionate and caring advice and assistance for your family at a most critical time. At AFMA, we understand the many challenges that military families can face during their service and after the loss of a loved one. As a nonprofit membership association, AFMA always focuses on what's best for you. That means offering the best prices on life insurance for all military personnel and the best services for survivors. And it also means offering policies with no war or aviation clauses. For a free life insurance quote, call a membership coordinator at 1-877-398-2263 or visit us online at AFMA.com. That's AAFMAA.com.
I'm Emily Cupp. Coming up on Monday's Federal Drive. Thomas.gov has lost ground to flashier websites that provide the same congressional information. Librarians are among those calling for the site's overhaul. And procrastinators will have last-minute tax tips for you and some advice to get a head start on your next return. Lots more, too, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Bob Suda and by yours truly. And we're up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story from as chosen by Bob Suda is from FCW. The headline is Finding the Hidden Value in Shared IT Services. Now, one of the things that agencies have struggled with over the years is agreeing that I'll use the same standards or requirements or whatever as some other agency without adding my extra layers onto it.
Right.
This is the whole thing that is my big reservation with FedRAMP.
Mm-hmm.
Is FedRAMP's going to lay the groundwork for this? The point of it is that you could then at agency X just use it with confidence, and yet there's still that extra space in there that would allow you to lay your own things on
top of it. Right.
Yeah. But that's what this story is talking about. Joe Klimovich, the CIO at the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, talking about the shared IT services model. What did you take away from what Joe's writing?
Well, this in general, you know, shared services has been around a long time. Mm-hmm. On the financial side, administrative side, IT side. I mean, NITSE out of USDA out in Kansas City has been doing it for years, NBC out of Interior. So it's not new stuff. You know, my whole issue with, I don't know if I say issue, but because we have to put another policy in place to support this.
Mm-hmm.
This has been around for a long time. People have been doing shared services. The biggest problem with shared services to me is how do you make everybody equal?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a big customer versus a small customer, who gets the better benefit of what's going on currently?
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's financial, IT, you know, version control, all of that you're going to be dealing with as a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to figure out how you do that. The other part of when I read the policy was I didn't think the CFOs were involved in what discussions should go on.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about cost analysis, but what about from a mission standpoint? What about from a real budget standpoint? What about from a program standpoint? How's it going to affect somebody's mission?
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, Joe hit a little bit on that in his discussion here. But I think the bigger picture for a lot of agencies and people I've talked to inside the agencies is how does it affect our mission? Do we lose control? How do we deal with version control? How do we deal with if we have Windows XP versus Windows 7? Because there's always a cost involved, and who pays for those costs?
Mm-hmm.
Who pays for the general overhead cost?
Yeah.
So if a shared service adds more people, does it spread across all of the customers or just a few of them? So somebody's got to look at all that before they finally make a decision that we have to do at least two now, they said, by the end of December.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe there's none I can do. I mean, we have to really take a hard look at it. I always call it the unintended consequences of doing something.
Mm-hmm.
You need to look down a road to say, okay, well, how is this really going to affect us in the long run?
Do you really think there are agencies, though, that are not in the position to do anything in shared services?
No, I wouldn't say that. It's just that you've got to bring all the parties inside your agency together to make sure they're all in agreement with that.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't, as an IT shop, say, we're going to do this. I think that how is it going to affect that mission's process with the taxpayer?
Now, every CIO that I talk to and every CFO that I talk to individually says, on and off the record, so mm-hmm. I don't think they're blowing smoke, our relationships are getting tighter and our relationships are getting better. And so the CFOs say, I have confidence that the CIO understands the financial piece of what has to happen at our agency. And the CIO says, I have confidence that the financial guy understands or lady understands what the IT piece of this is and why it's important to the mission of the agency. So that's at least a good sign.
Because,
I mean, I imagine 5 years ago, that wasn't
the
case.
Everybody was separate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I think it's gotten much better. Now, process. I still think what's missing is the mission people, the program people that are dealing with these mm-hmm. particular, you know, taxpayer issues.
Now, what Joe's writing about here, Joe Klimovich at NOAA, he's writing about shared services within NOAA and the component agencies inside NOAA.
Right. Yeah.
Now, the push that Stephen Van Roekel is making is for agencies, for this to go cross-agency,
right,
not just within one particular agency.
But you have NBC today and Interior doing that. You have NHTSA that does stuff for other agencies besides mm-hmm. USDA.
So that's what I wanted to get at. There are models out there.
Mm-hmm.
So to somebody who looks and says, well, agencies don't want to do that or it won't work, it does work.
It does work.
There
right.
are cases where it does work.
Yeah.
What issues do you see, if any, as far as some of those things either being replicable or scalable that all it will I guess what I'm getting at is, how do we make it that the only excuse for an agency is I just don't feel like it?
Well, first thing, I think you have to limit the number of shared service environments that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't say everybody's going to do this, right? Because then you get – it's the wild, wild west.
Right.
So I think there's got to be four or five maybe at the maximum. So like the FM line of business they did years ago. So I think there's ways of doing it. I mean, agencies want to do this kind of stuff if it's going to save them money.
Mm-hmm.
But then, again, mission people have to understand that it's going to show the savings that they need in order to do their job.
Are we finally to the point where the budgets are so tight and the pressure is so high to save money that people will do things that previously they didn't want to do didn't want any part of?
Yeah,
is the reality
the
really?
Reality is okay. hitting right now.
Okay.
I mean, people I talk to inside government, it's really hitting hard.
What are the holdups then beyond what we've talked about so far? Because otherwise it would seem to me that we should look at December and everybody's well on their way to doing this.
Other priorities. I mean, you got priorities of the secretary within a department. You got, you know, things coming out of mobility, things mm-hmm. coming out. It's like the old procurement thing. You know, they had five different things come out, like EVM at one time and performance-based contracting. They had four or five things coming out at one time that people just couldn't get their hands around any of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you just can't keep on issuing policy out of OMB or any place, you know, four or five or six at a time and say, you got to do all these things.
Yeah.
There's not enough resources to go around. There's not enough management people to even try to manage it. You know, PMs or whatever, or contract, or no money.
That's where I was going to go next, is maybe should we have a moratorium on new initiatives and priorities and programs and so on, because it seems like we got plenty right now.
And they're trying to fix the internal issues
mm-hmm.
that they currently have with their current systems, legacy systems or whatever else they're working on, but they're just trying to fix security issues. I mean, there's all kinds of things that have come from the past that we're still dealing with the future, but now we got some more future stuff to deal with on top of that.
On the vendor side, are the vendors providing, do you think, the right tools for the agencies? Are they giving the agencies what they need, or are the agencies having to choose from a menu of services that are not quite a fit for what they really need to execute well?
I think the vendors, the industry people have gotten much smarter in trying to figure out what the needs are of the agencies versus what the wants are. So I think they've come back and they offer solutions now versus saying, whatever you guys want, you let us know, we'll come in and do it.
Yeah.
So I think the companies are trying to now offer up new innovative solutions to try to do, whether it's virtualization or whatever, cloud computing. I mean, I think cloud's a good thing to do. It's just a matter of how do you do it.
Right. Well, and the agencies that are successful with it are taking it a step beyond that, because a lot of agencies, I think, took that approach the way that you just outlined it there. Well, cloud's a good idea, so we'll do it.
Right.
Well, why? What's what's the benefit that you derive from that, and not just do it for the sake of doing it?
What's the mission benefit?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the mission benefit?
Exactly.
Right.
Bob Suda's second most important federal news story of the week is from Federal Computer Week. The headline is Finding the Hidden Value in Shared IT Services. You can read it on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. When we come back, my choice for the second most important federal news story of the week on the Federal News Countdown on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Here's Zach Goldstein, Deputy CIO at NOAA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Big Data, sponsored by EMC Isilon.
I think the solutions that we're talking about here to address the challenges and opportunities of big data will generate economic growth. There's an industry here that has to respond, and it becomes an engine for that.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
And now here's Gary Newgard, Director of Federal Solutions for EMC Isilon, the leader in big data and scale-out storage.
EMC delivers a portfolio of game-changing technologies, transforming full-motion video and ISR. EMC's edge to the national solution is a cost-efficient path to the cloud and the optimum solution for big data.
When your agency's expanding data requires effective storage, visit emc.com/isilon. That's emc.com/ISILON.
Are you ready to take a leadership role in your public service or nonprofit career? Become a leader at the forefront of modern government practices with a Master of Public Administration degree from Central Michigan University in Alexandria. This unique program is enriched with international content, a vital element in today's global economy. CMU's Master of Public Administration degree is NASPAA certified and the gold standard degree for public administrators.
I would recommend if you work in local, state, or federal government and you're interested in learning about management, organizational leadership, this is definitely a good program. It's a very strong program.
Learn how you can prepare for senior leadership positions with Central Michigan University's adult-friendly Master of Public Administration degree taught right here in Alexandria. Classes will be held at CMU's Alexandria Center. Go to cmich.edu/metroDC. That's cmich.edu/metroDC for more information or call 877-679-1268. Central Michigan University in Alexandria. Quality degrees, convenient formats. Certified operate by CHEV.
Are you a federal or U.S. Postal Service employee or annuitant, or an active or retired member of the uniformed services? If so, you're eligible to apply for coverage under the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program. The program offers a smart way to help protect savings and assets and remain independent should you need long-term care services someday. Make long-term care insurance part of your retirement plan. Find out how at ltcfeds.com. That's ltcfeds.com.
Kicking cancer to the curb. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Data from the annual report to the nation on the status of cancer tells us that cancer death rates are dropping. Between 2004 and 2008, death rates for all cancers combined decreased 1.6% per year. The reduction is a combination of healthier American lifestyles and understanding of different health risks. Christy Eamon is an epidemiologist with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Reductions in smoking have made a large impact on cancer rates.
Maintaining a healthy weight can help you decrease your risk for certain cancers. So can getting regular screenings.
Improved screening allows us to detect some cancers at an earlier stage when treatment is more effective.
The findings were co-authored by CDC researchers. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
Rising government leaders are registering now to attend Excellence in Government, the nation's only event focused on helping managers achieve more mission for the money. Here, top officials and thought leaders share transformative new ways of operating, network with peers, and join the conversations which are reshaping government. Join your federal colleagues for Excellence in Government, May 7th in Washington, D.C., to get the ideas you need now to transform your agency, your program, and your career. Register today at excellenceingov.com.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week on the Federal News Countdown, the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Bob Suda and by yours truly. And my choice for the second most important federal news story of the week is Gillian Brockle's story on federalnewsradio.com headlined, White House Unveils New Tool to Stop Improper Payments. The Do Not Pay tool is out, Bob. And one thing that I hope is that I hope that the administration, as they have done so far, promotes this as the first step toward combating improper payments and not as a finished product. That's my hope for this effort, because as a taxpayer, I can certainly say I don't think it's a great idea to pay money to people who don't deserve it. There are a number of ways that the administration has tried to stop doing that.
Right.
And the Do Not Pay tool is one of those. Treasury Department, Office of Management and Budget working on combining this database or a number of databases so that you can go, you have one source to go to do a check on somebody or some organization, some company, and see if they should get money that they're asking the federal government to pay them. My fear is that this will get pushed along quicker than it should because of some of the high profile headlines like, OPM Inspector General report in September found the agency had paid more than $600 million in retirement benefits to dead people.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the kinds of things that make somebody on Capitol Hill go, this should be done 15 minutes from now. There's no excuse for this to continue, blah, 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 blah.
Right.
It scrambles the priorities, as we just talked about in our last segment, and something over here that's also important doesn't get done or doesn't get done well because somebody has to make a slapdash effort to put something together to please somebody on Capitol Hill.
Right. I mean, I think this is a great first step that will be put together with Treasury. I mean, obviously, like you said, if we take this and make this the holy grail of how we're going to do this, what gets pushed aside to fix the problem overall,
mm-hmm.
okay, versus just a patchwork type of thing of going in manually and checking on whether these people are due payment or not due payment. So you got to look at it both ways. You got to say this is a piece of the pie to a bigger solution.
I will say the website donotpay.treas.gov, which we'll link up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon. It's easy to use. I poked around it. I mean, to the extent that I could as a non-governmental person,
right.
It looks like it's been well thought out. Whoever put this together tried to make it as user-friendly as possible. You and I were talking during the break, though, that it's not clear yet how much volume you can do at any given time with any group of information. It's not that we can't. It's not that you can't. It's just that's not – this is still new enough that that's not clear yet.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't read the whole thing yet. I haven't looked at the website yet, but I'm not sure if it's used by government employees only or by the
yes,
public.
Yes, government employees only.
So it's
yes.
all password protected. All that.
Yes.
So, I mean, again, it goes back to is anybody individual checking each individual payment, or is there a way of pushing volume through that to make sure that, you know, you're doing 100 at a time versus one at a time? What's the time constraint, time consumption of doing those type of things? And I'm sure they thought about all that.
They've got an enrollment process. There's a tab that you can click at the Do Not Pay site, or they have a help desk set up that you can call, and somebody can help you go through the whole process to link up your agency. And the FAQs, they seem to have thought of the things that you and I would like to know in general. But as a place to start, to at least start to feed this data, this is, I think, a great step. What I wonder also is what the process is by which you're ascertaining that the data that's fed into these databases is clean.
It's clean.
That you're not going to get somebody showing up on this list that as – dead that's actually still alive. And, I mean, with the kind of volume that we're dealing with here, those things are going to happen. It's
right.
just
it's system.
As long as it's humans running the system, right. That's how it's going to be. But the volume of that is what I really wonder about.
Yeah, and again, you know, the question comes back to this: majority of the improper payments are going to, sounds like, individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, the contractor payments over the last several years have been pretty much cleaned up. There's probably a little improper payment going on, but comparative to the amount of individuals getting paid that should not get paid, I think it's a drop in the bucket.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that focus needs to be on those four or five agencies who are paying out grants or paying out individual payments.
Is there a correlation there? Is it fair to assume that the programs that pay out the most money are also making the most improper payments,
no,
or are there other factors involved?
There's other
there?
Factors. I mean, obviously, you know, like DOD paid mostly contractors.
Mm-hmm.
So they're gonna have what they call a CCR. They have various other databases sitting out there. They have the disbarment, you know, list out there too. So, I mean, they have, from a contractor standpoint, there are some safeguards in place, or mm-hmm. a lot of safeguards in place.
The whole idea of improper payments is politically appealing because, obviously, it's easy for the average person who doesn't pay a lot of attention to the government to say, yeah, they shouldn't pay money to dead people. That's pretty clear cut.
Sure.
Is it as big a source as the administration is devoting attention to it? Is the potential for preventing payments sufficient to justify the amount of attention and resources that are going to improper payments?
Most definitely.
Okay.
Most definitely, yeah, I agree. I mean, when this first came out a couple of years ago, first talked about proper payments, I mean, I would have suggested at that time that something really quick would be a SWAT team going into some of those agencies and figuring out what is going on with mm-hmm. those particular systems and why that's happening. Okay, which they've probably done it internally,
mm-hmm.
but I think the amount of money that's involved here and the amount of resource they put in this thing so far, it definitely outweighs. I mean, it's a good thing.
How much of it do you think can be attributed to, like, legacy systems that are just not equipped to handle the kind of volume or the kind of information or whatever?
I think it's more paperwork. When people pass away, people die, you know, the way that things interface with each other,
mm-hmm.
whether it's a funeral home sending something to Social Security Administration. I remember my dad passed away, you know, this is 20 years ago. There was an electronic feed at that time into, you know, VA because he was a veteran. So they stopped the payment automatically.
I mean, right.
So there were things already in place there.
Mm-hmm.
I just think a lot of things are still paperwork, and a lot of it is dealing with the paper issues.
I guess what I'm getting at is, are these logistical issues that people are just trying and struggling to work through because they're complicated, or is there some sense that this is just isn't a big deal to some folks at some agencies and it's not happening? It sounds like it's more the former.
It's more the former.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. My second most important federal news story of this week is headlined, White House Unveils New Tool to Stop Improper Payments. You can read it and all of the stories on the Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com. You may know that since Bob is a veteran of the General Services Administration, there's been a little bit going on at that agency, and you might have an idea then of what our choices for the most important federal news story of the week may be. You'll find out for sure next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
The Government Accountability Office is considered essential to the congressional oversight process, but last year Congress cut the agency's budget. Now staffing numbers are expected to drop to their lowest level since the 1930s. GAO Comptroller General Gene Dodaro says the cuts mean missed opportunities to save agencies money. Federal News Radio's special report GAO, a watchdog muzzled, takes an in-depth look at the issues facing the agency. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. Search watchdog.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Profile America, Friday, April 13th. One of the most influential books of the last century was published on this date 50 years ago, Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. The book, which warned of the dangers of indiscriminate use of chemical pesticides, was immensely popular but controversial in some quarters. Its themes were that all species on Earth exist in an interrelated way, and that not enough was known about the long-term effects of pesticide use. The impact of Carson's book led to the banning of the use of DDT in the U.S. and helped form the movement to protect the environment. Today, farmers across the country use $11.5 billion worth of pesticides each year to protect their crops. You can find more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by, this week, one person who's an expert in the world of the federal government and one person who's just a hanger-on. My expert is Bob Suda, who is, of course, a veteran of the General Services Administration and the Department of Agriculture, and the hanger-on is me, the host of In Depth with Francis Rose. And Bob, I always love having you on the show, but especially this week as we talk about our story that is...
Number one!
The most important federal news story of the week that you chose was FCW's coverage of the GSA scandal. I've got our shakeup at GSA coverage on federalnewsradio.com. And I actually chose our coverage page, which has like eight stories on them, right, because this is like the old top 40 days where the hits just keep on coming. Mm-hmm. Every day, it seems there is a drip, 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 to the point now where some of my colleagues and I are starting to get skeptical and cynical about the Transportation Committee, because they've got a new one every day. And I'm not debating the quality of the research that they've done, but it's obvious now that there is an agenda here other than what can we do to hold GSA accountable for what has happened and make sure that this doesn't happen again in the future.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that or not. I mean, I think this incident obviously was isolated. It was regrettable, to say the least. But let me first off and say, listen, Martha Johnson was probably one of the best administrators that agency's ever had. And, you know, bringing Dan over from Treasury, I think, is another good idea. I mean, they actually made a good move. He's a finance guy. He knows his numbers. He's very understanding. He knows his, he's going to try to do things right and keep them on course and focus on the mission. Mm-hmm. And I think that what's what has to happen now is still stay focused on the mission. We're getting caught up in all the water cooler talk and everything else. And to all my old GSA people out there, listen, hang in there and, you know, focus on the mission, because you're all doing a great job over there. We had a few bad apples we're dealing with, I think, when it's all said and done.
One of the things that you and I talked about in our warm-up session before we went on the radio is that this is so far has been limited in coverage. All of the coverage that we've heard of this has focused on this one part of the General Services Administration, primarily on public building service, and exclusively on one part of the country. Mm-hmm. So not even impugning the reputation of the other regions or the other parts of PBS.
Right.
So from that perspective, other than saying, keep your chin up, what do the other parts of GSA do just to let, if nobody else know, their other customers in government know, wait a minute, this isn't us? Or do you think people understand, even in other agencies, how GSA operates well enough to know that what you just said, this is just one small part of one small part?
Well, you know, we've always said at GSA, when I was there, I was always, you know, think globally, act locally.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the local communities in those various regions that are not part of this, I mean, are going to understand that, listen, we know who GSA is. They're great people. They work with us very well. They provide us a great service. So I think, you know, in the communities where this has not happened, I think they'll have to work through it. They'll have to work harder to get their trust back. But as you said, though, it was isolated to one part of the country. And what I find incredulous is that they were allowed to have a four-region conference that didn't include the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that should never happen. Right? This should be it's the same type of services they're doing across the country. It should all be inclusive across the country, just not four regions.
Yeah.
Now, they've been doing it for a long time, obviously. And so I'm not sure why that transpired that way, but I think that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. As you look at this from the outside, but with an insider's level of knowledge, where did things go wrong that could have been prevented? And the reason I throw that last phrase is if, and I want to be very clear to say, mm-hmm. if someone chooses to go around the rules, or someone chooses to do something that's not appropriate or correct, there's not a whole lot somebody can do about it, except catch them.
Catch them, right.
Given that, in hindsight, is there a place where Congress could look at this and constructively, rather than politically, say, here are opportunities, Mr. Tangerlini, that we believe that you potentially could do something to make sure this doesn't happen again?
You know, as I said in a written article I did for FedLoop just the other day, GSA needs to deal with this internally. All the political and media around this has to, you know, stop. I mean, we've got to have one hearing versus four hearings. We've got to let Dan and his team now try to focus on what needs to be fixed inside the agency and mm-hmm. let them do their internal work without having to jump through so many hoops so quickly and probably give some bad data based upon trying to get the stuff done in a very quick manner to get it to the Hill. I think there needs to be this, you know, calming effect that where Dan takes the reins and gets with the right people, gets out there in the regions and talks to these folks, whatever. I mean, there's the IG hotline. Everybody has availability to call the hot IG hotline as an anonymous person, right, to report these things.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's ways of doing it. I mean, there are people supposedly on staff in Region 9, San Francisco, that said this is the wrong thing to do. But the senior management seemed like they didn't want to listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, it's you can't fix people who don't want to be fixed.
Right.
Right. You just can't fix that.
Mm-hmm.
It's unfortunate that 300 people went to Las Vegas, and the 300 people that were there were probably 290 of them, didn't know what was going to happen. They knew
right.
they were going for a training session.
Mm-hmm.
They were going to learn something. There was probably some good sessions during the course of the day. But the things that happened afterwards were limited to a few. So the parties that they had sounds like, according to the IG report, it wasn't everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It was a few people,
mm-hmm.
right? Mostly probably the leadership of the organization. So the staff people are also getting hurt by this who yeah. actually went there for training.
And I wonder, too, if you're one of those 290 or whatever the number is, who's just your only role in this is attending, I wonder how well-versed you're expected to be on rules and regulations for putting on a conference that you would be expected to walk in the door and go, this looks weird. I don't think there's something right about this. Maybe I should call the Inspector General's office.
Well, again,
I think that's too
yeah.
much of a responsibility to put on just a rank-and-file employee who's there for the training or whatever the exercise
is. Well, again,
is.
You have the ethics rules that you deal with, right? There are travel regulations. Or, you know, I mean, there are all kinds of things within the department that people can read.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go to, you know, anybody, you could have been in San Diego. It could have been in Honolulu. It would have been the same situation possibly, right? People who go are going for one reason, to maybe train.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're thinking about, right? And we're going to Vegas. Great. It wasn't even Vegas. It was Henderson,
yeah.
which is 20 minutes outside of Vegas. So, I mean, it wasn't like it was in downtown on the Strip.
Right.
But I think employees are getting burned or getting hurt by it now from their customers because they attended. And that should not happen.
Mm-hmm.
This is limited to a few number of people that, you know, should be dealt with accordingly according to the ethics rules and what's going to be done. Disciplinary-wise.
The most important federal news story of the week, as selected both by Bob Suda and myself, is the ongoing situation at the General Services Administration, and we'll continue our conversation about it to wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Military families make great sacrifices so that we can be safe, secure, and free. That's why we at United Health Military and Veteran Services are so honored to have been selected to serve families in the TRICARE West region starting in April 2013. United Healthcare serves over 78 million Americans nationwide. We have the experience and expertise to make healthcare better for our servicemen and women and their families. United Healthcare's expansive network provides access to hundreds of thousands of physicians and specialists. We focus on making it possible for healthcare teams to work together and share important information about your care. And at United Healthcare, we use innovative technologies to make sure you get the right care from the right doctor for your needs. Military families help keep us safe. So at United Healthcare, helping military families isn't just a job, it's an honor. To learn more, visit UnitedHealthMilitary.com.
Here's an inspiring story provided by Insperity.
Hi, I'm Tony Sterling, Vice President of Project Support Services Incorporated, a service-disabled veteran-owned small business. We provide project and contract support services to federal, state, and local government. I wear many hats in my job, as I'm sure most of you do, in small and mid-market companies. In 2008, we had only 46 employees. Now, thanks to Insperity's diverse spectrum of services, we have 156 employees and a true national footprint. One of the keys to our rapid growth is Insperity. They give us the resources of a large corporation in areas like HR, payroll, recruiting, training, and consulting on compliance issues. It's comforting to know that we have Insperity in our corner.
Insperity understands the many challenges faced by the federal contracting community. You need the right resources to give you the competitive advantage. Insperity's multi-state infrastructure gives you big company resources without compromising your status. Call 800-465-3800 or visit Insperity.com. Insperity, inspiring business performance.
When you build the world's most complex ships for the U.S. Navy and U.S. Coast Guard, there's no question you know how to do the hard stuff right. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, it's what we do every day. We are a company that's more than a century old and built upon the foundation of two legends, Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding, with an unwavering focus on safety, quality, cost, and schedule. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff. Done right. Visit HuntingtonIngalls.com today.
Registration's now open for the all-new ACT-IACT Management of Change Conference, featuring interactive sessions around cloud, mobility, and security, and a future technology expo, June 3rd through 5th at the Hyatt Regency, Cambridge, Maryland. This government industry training forum is hosted by the American Council for Technology and Industry Advisory Council. Register and learn more at actgov.org/managementofchange. That's actgov.org/managementofchange.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown every week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by this week, myself and my friend Bob Suda, who is president and senior consultant at Suda & Associates and a veteran of the Department of Transportation, Department of Agriculture, and the General Services Administration. And, of course, our most important federal news story of the week on the countdown is the situation at the General Services Administration. From a news perspective, from a media perspective, this is the gift that keeps on giving, because every day it seems like either the House Oversight Committee or House Transportation Committee has some new detail to release, and we have it all collected at federalnewsradio.com. You can use the search term shakeup at GSA to find all of our stories. They're all collected there together, and there's a link on the homepage as well. The latest that we're learning today is an email that the Transportation Committee released, sent from, according to the information that they provide, from Susan Britta to Bob Peck regarding an email of reprimand, that of rebuke, to be sent to Jeff Neely. Mm-hmm. And this email essentially is Susan Britta. I'm paraphrasing. You can read the text of it on our website. But the text of it essentially says that what you're proposing sending to him to chastise him for all of this is not nearly sufficient, is not good enough. This was from the middle of 2011. So this indicates that people inside GSA at a very high level, people who should have known about it, knew about it at that time, and yet the Inspector General's reporting on it, and we're all learning about it now. What does that mean, in your view, to this whole timeline, given the fact that Bob Peck, Martha Johnson, Stephen Leeds are no longer in positions of authority at the General Services Administration? Does this kind of information make any difference at this point?
Not now. I mean, it's past history. Like you said during the break, I think what's important is that that Bob actually walked into the room at the Las Vegas M Hotel, whatever it's called, in Henderson, and had a two-loft suite. And as you said, should have walked in, walked back out, went down, got another room, and said, I can't have this room.
Yeah.
Right? That didn't happen. That, to me, was the first big mistake, as well as the planning sessions that were going on before that. The lack, as I think Dan said in his article the other day to the employees, lack of common sense. Right? You should know better. You're a public servant for public trust. And I think that's where we missed the boat right now with these people.
Moving forward, I expect to see, with the hearings that start on Monday, the lineup is Oversight Committee Monday afternoon, Transportation Committee early on Tuesday morning, and then Wednesday, the Senate Environmental and Public Works Committee. There's another one that escapes
later
me
on,
right now.
Right, yeah.
But those are the three that I know of that are scheduled off the top of my head. Are we going to see anything constructive out of this, or is this going to be a bunch of throwing rocks at GSA?
I think it's going to be a bunch of throwing rocks at GSA. I mean, it's going to be three hearings in 3 days,
mm-hmm.
and it's like, okay, why don't we just have one? Like, get everybody involved in it, have one discussion. Let's get beyond that so the people at GSA, senior leadership, can get back to their job of mending the fences that need to be mended and trying to figure out what else is going on, if there's anything else going on. That's what that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
They need to focus internally on what's happening in the department.
I'm going to pull back on this in about 15 minutes, and I'm going to talk to Tom Davis, who is the former chairman of the Oversight Committee, mm-hmm. which will be hosting the hearing that kicks this off. We only have about a minute left, Bob. What I'm going to talk to Congressman Davis about is the idea of this is not the first issue at a high level at GSA. As somebody who's been inside the building, what does that say to you that this agency continues to have these kinds of controversies, even if you can't pin anything on any particular person?
You know, every department has their issues. I mean, it's just, again, it's every couple of years something has happened. It's going to happen. We're dealing with, you know, just issues that come up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this, you know, nobody's perfect. So things are going to happen, whether it was Loretta or whether it was, you know, the Safavian or whatever it might have been.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's always going to – there's happening in every agency, something like that.
It's always terrific to have you on the countdown. You chose great stories this week, and I enjoy seeing you and talking to you every time.
Same here, Francis.
Best to your lovely wife, Joanne, too.
Thank you.
Bob Suit is my guest on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. All the stories that we've counted down on the program today are linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose next. Congressman Davis coming up on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.